Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Continuing discussion about institutions and institutionalism, with special reference to religious institutions, with even more focused discussion of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, of which I and probably the great majority of the viewers of this talk, viewers and hearers of this talk, are also members of, either closely or less closely or associated with. I'm going to start with a quote from a scholar of religion, not specifically a devotee of Krishna. And you may wonder why I'm doing so, because we're supposed to quote from Gita, Bhagavatam, and all these ancient scriptures. But I'm talking about religion. Talking about religion as the institution of religion rather than the teachings of religion. The institution of religion is something that operates within this material world. It functions according to the rules and norms and mores of this material world. And it is studyable according to the systems of study of this material world, because it follows the same patterns. There is an academic discipline called the sociology of religion, because there are certain patterns which can be observed within religious organizations everywhere, at all times and all places and all circumstances. The general patterns. And ISKCON, believe it or not, is not independent of these general patterns, because after all, it is composed of people coming from the platform of material consciousness, living within the material sphere, and aiming at that which, through religion, aiming at that which all seekers of transcendental reality or the absolute truth or God have sought since time immemorial. Anyway, the quote I'm going to quote is from Huston Smith, who was until recently one of the most famous and respected scholars of religion in the world. Until recently he died, that's what happened, and it happens to all religious scholars in due course of time. Now, he's a religious scholar whose career was largely predicated on studying. What do religious scholars study? Well, they can study. There are various departments, but particularly the sociology of religion, studying institutional religion, religious institutions. So the very thing that he studied, his conclusion that he came to, or a comment he made, which is nothing earth-shattering, but it's insightful nevertheless. He said, institutions are not pretty. Show me a pretty government. Healing is wonderful, but the American Medical Association? Question mark. Learning is wonderful, but universities? This is coming from a man whose whole career, whose whole life was spent in universities. But he takes it speaking to his audience, which is probably a university audience mostly. He takes it as axiomatic that they will agree with him that universities are not pretty per se. And he goes on to say, coming to his point, talking about institutions in general, the same is true for religion. Religion is institutionalized spirituality. So what he's getting at is that spirituality is good. It's something desirable, laudable. But religion is not desirable, laudable, not pretty, because it is institutionalized spirituality. Now, Srila Prabhupada founded the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He referred to it in at least two letters as a great institution. Srila Prabhupada didn't have a hang-up about the term institution, which is quite often used as a pejorative term to refer to ISKCON or any other religious institution. What's the problem? Oh, that's a big topic. I'll get into it more, but one overarching factor is it's perceived that the institutions deal with formalities, goals of the institution, rules and regulations, and not the individuals who comprise them. That individuals who join the religious institution, in this case, for the sake of realizing religious goals, become subject to the workings and machinations of the institution, and then the goals of the institution, such as we have to collect so many million dollars to build a big temple, or we have to distribute so many books. We have to have a good image in public, and so many goals that the institution may have. And then what is widely perceived, and it's called institutionalism, is that the needs of the individual become subordinated to those of the institution. Of course, people join an institution for what it's got to offer them, because they perceive that it will fulfill their individual need. But what happens, what's purported to happen, is that the needs of the individual get suffocated. Or by saying that, oh, you just follow the institution and your individual need will be automatically fulfilled. But they may not feel like that. The individuals may not feel like that. Recently, I saw a snippet of a discussion taking place. I saw it on YouTube, I believe, in which my godbrother, one of my godbrothers, Garuda Prabhu, who himself is an academic in an institution, a prestigious university in the United States, and he's in the field of religious studies. He was speaking quite animatedly, quite passionately, I'm not saying that in a derogatory way, and he feeling, with a lot of feeling, that the discussion was about rules and regulations within society. And Garuda Prabhu said that Srila Prabhupada dealt with us as individuals, not so much as all the rules and the structure and this and that. Well, I immediately when I heard that, I disagreed, because I could think of at least one individual who Srila Prabhupada didn't deal with like that, and that was me. And actually, that was the story for most of us, including probably Garuda Prabhu himself, that Srila Prabhupada pragmatically understood that it's not possible for him to deal individually with thousands of disciples. I'm saying Prabhupada didn't deal with me individually, not that he didn't make arrangement for our individual needs, but he did so through the medium of his institution. He delegated power to a responsibility, let's say, to put it more nicely, although power, certainly there. He delegated with different levels, GBC members under him, and then under the GBC members, temple presidents, and then the temple presidents were supposed to deal with individual devotees. And if it's a big temple, then they may have different departments with department heads. And I do feel that my individual needs were taken care of. My individual spiritual search was taken care of, when I wasn't neglected as an individual, although I certainly had to conform to the rules and the needs of the institution, which I saw and voluntarily, I looked at and I voluntarily accepted. And my individual needs were taken care of, but not individually or personally by Srila Prabhupada. That Srila Prabhupada made a structure. He made rules. In other words, he made an organized religion or an institution. And this, to say that, well, Prabhupada dealt with us as individuals, true, but there are certain rules which are required to be followed if one is to be within the institution. Everyone has their own likes and dislikes and tendencies and idiosyncrasies. But if one is to be a member of this institution, then there are certain rules to follow. And if one is to be a member within an ashram of the institution, then there are many, many, many more rules to follow than if one is what is called a congregational member. The lay people and the clergy, for the clergy, or those who are full-time members of the institution, there are many, many rules to follow. And it's not that, well, I'm an individual and therefore you have to see to that. Well, no, first you have to follow the rules, and then within the rules, individualism may be allowed to some extent. That's why Srila Prabhupada said in one often quoted letter that we shouldn't, to Karandar, I'll quote that later, I'm not sure whether I'll get round to it today, saying that, well, we shouldn't be too eager to have so many people come and join. Let them come and see and get used to it and understand what they're getting into. And then when they join, they should be able to follow all the rules. So Srila Prabhupada, catering to individuals, yes, but also requiring everyone to follow the same basic rules. He made an organized religion. The same basic rules are there for everyone to make all the participants into pure devotees. There's a system, the science of bhakti yoga. Srila Prabhupada often called it a science. Science means if you follow certain procedures, you can predict a certain result. For instance, if you mix alkali with acid, most simple sense, then you, within a medium of water, it's generally understood, There will be effervescence, which means a reaction is going on. Some gas is produced, oxygen is released, and a salt and water come out of that. A salt, not salt, but a salt. There are so many different kinds of salts. So it's predictable. It might not happen under certain circumstances. For instance, if the water is very cold, if the concentration of acid or alkali or both are not sufficient. But generally speaking, if the procedures are followed, a certain result will be there. So similarly in Krishna consciousness, if the procedures are followed, a certain result will be there. But if you don't follow the procedures properly, you might not get the promised result. So in this way, Krishna consciousness is a science. And this science was given by Krishna, given through Rupa Goswami, given to us by Srila Prabhupada. He repeatedly emphasized that his disciples must chant 16 rounds daily of the Hare Krishna mantra, must follow the four regulations, must rise early, attend Mangal Aarti, read his books. He spoke of discharging duties as if in military discipline. And again, this is for particularly for those who have taken to ashram life. They are compelled to follow these rules. If one, actually even for initiated devotees, Srila Prabhupada wanted that. Although if you're not in the ashram, you do have some leeway to do your own thing. But Krishna consciousness means to do Krishna's thing, which in the beginning stage, which we don't get out of very quickly or very easily, in the beginning stage means following certain rules. Now, this is very different. This is organized religion, and it's very different to that which persons who disparage organized religion conceive of as actual spirituality. There's this idea of being spiritual but not religious. In other words, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious in the sense that I follow any particular guide or any particular, I'm not in any straitjacket, I'm just spiritual. This is all cheating, just this feeling that I'm spiritual, because every genuinely spiritual person who has attempted in the history of the world, as we know it, and within the Vedic corpus, we have knowledge not only of this planet, but of planets beyond the vision of people on this planet at the present time. We have knowledge of going back eons. And it's the same, that those who are spiritually realized persons, they give certain formulae to follow so that people, their followers, can become spiritually realized. It's a science. It's not a new science. It's, presumably, if we take the accepted axioms of science, the laws of physics and chemistry, they should have been there right there at the Big Bang, if you believe in the Big Bang. They're just according to the scientific idea, but they're just, they're laws, and they don't change. If you go back, you go into some deep cavern in some remote unexplored jungle, if there's any such thing left in this world today, and you somehow or other find some acid and some alkali and mix them together, having gone back in your time machine 20,000 years, and the same thing. You mix the acid and the alkali, and they'll bubble up and there'll be a reaction. So it's the same thing. Spiritual life doesn't mean just feeling spiritual, but one of the hallmarks of a genuine religion, actually one reason why discerning people in the early days of the Krishna consciousness movement in the Western world could see that this Krishna consciousness movement is a genuine religion as distinguished from the, so many opportunists who came from India to make a quick buck, because it follows rules. And it's the same rules and the same tradition that has been followed by so many people, an established religion for centuries. And that's what they distinguish. It's a genuine religion. Say, I don't want a genuine religion. I just want spirituality. But it's cheating. You just can't jump from gross materialism and ignorance into absolutely spiritual platform. It just doesn't happen. It's imagination. It's self-cheating to think like that. So rules are there, organization is there to facilitate the practice when many people are, if you want many people to follow, if it's a good thing, why not give it to many? Why, the idea of some guru sitting in a cave in some remote mountain range and someone with taking great difficulty manages to cross all the hurdles and come up to the cave and pleads with the yogi inside to accept him as a disciple, and the yogi says no, and then he comes back 55 times, and then the yogi, after putting him through many tests, finally accepts him as a disciple. Well, if you've got something good to give, why be so restricted in giving it? Especially we have the Hare Krishna mantra. It can be very easily taken, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted it spread to every town and village in the world. We don't find advanced hermits in every town and village. In fact, we don't find hermits in any town or village, because that's, by definition, hermits don't live in towns or villages. Towns and villages, according to the Vedic understanding, they're in the Rajaguna, the mode of passion. And for spiritual life, generally understood, one has to go to a situation in Sattaguna, in which one has to go to a remote forest or hills. But this Krishna consciousness, because it is Atma Dharma, it is the inherent nature of the soul, it can be spread to everyone in all places, all times, and all circumstances. But to do that requires some kind, to affect that, requires some kind of organization. And not just some kind, but there are specifics. There are specific things to do. Rupa Goswami, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in which he describes the highest level of spiritual, blissful, loving exchanges with Krishna, he starts by explaining all the things that people in their neophyte stage have to do, which includes, first of all, taking shelter of a guru, Krishna Diksha, taking initiation, then taking instruction, serving the guru with affection, but serving means one subordinates oneself. And then there are so many rules he gives that one has to follow. The rules are there. That's unavoidable. And then in an institution, there apart from the rules for our spiritual advancement, there are rules for institutional living. There's a hierarchy one has to follow. One sacrifices one's independence, which may seem counterintuitive. If we're going to realize our spiritual potential, we don't just want to become just another figure in a tapestry. There's just like we see the people, they're all walking in a big city, they're walking on the sidewalk, and just another face in the crowd. We want to develop our own individual personal spirituality you want to be different. But then again, you become a member of an organization. And you seem to think, wait a minute, what happened to my individual personality? So it is a quandary or paradox, in one sense, that to bring out our full individualism, which can be realized on the spiritual level, not the material level, we within this material world, while practicing, we have to go through certain rules. Something like this: if we're sick, we want to jump and dance and sing and have fun. But if we're sick, we can't. We can attempt to, but in our sick state, we won't be able to do so properly. And attempting to do so in our sick state, attempting to act on the healthy platform, will exacerbate our disease. Rather, we have to follow the rules, the directions given by the physician, by which we can gradually become better. And then we can dance, run, sing, play, laugh, everything. But in our diseased condition, we have to act according to the limitations of the situation and accept with faith the directions of the physician. Considering the physician has my best wishes at heart, knows how to guide me, what to do. And if he tells me to take it at the proper pace, I should do so. So Krishna consciousness is meant for bringing out ultimate individualism, personalism. That's a central feature, if not the central feature of the Krishna conscious movement. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, and we are all eternally persons in his service. We reject the impersonal idea of liberation, which is so popular, that one loses one's individuality. Well, that's what people are afraid of by joining a religious institution. You'll lose your individuality. But it's a funny thing. Often their idea of spirituality is just to lose your individualism anyway and just merge into some oneness. But devotees, they reject that. So this Krishna conscious movement is meant for ultimate individualism. But at the same time, it's a religious organization, and they're all diverse kinds of people, to synergize their activities, to direct their activities. It requires an organization with its specific modus operandi, rules. And the catch is to keep the institution working to uplift the individual spiritually rather than just making persons into cogs in a machine. And the catch is to keep the institution completely spiritually focused. There is the danger of, not only the danger, but it seems the almost unavoidable, phenomenon. When you don't know what to say, say phenomenon. The unavoidable phenomenon of religions becoming more like social and political constructs than being truly spiritual. Okay, now we got this big temple, the temple's built so that we could all chant Hare Krishna together here, but in the meantime, we have to have enough money to keep the temple running, so we have to send everybody out to bring in some money. And we can't live here together and chant Hare Krishna unless we have money. And therefore, getting the money becomes the first. Otherwise, we can't chant Hare Krishna. Actually, you can chant Hare Krishna without a temple, but now we have the temple. we better keep it going. I've several times spoken on that paradox, that we're collecting money so that we can preach, but we can't preach because we're collecting money. We can't tell people, surrender to Krishna, give up all your nonsense, hogwash ideas, and simply surrender at the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. We can't say all that because we want to take money from them. Therefore, we have to flatter them, and it's much easier to collect money by talking about feeding poor people, feeding school children, and so on. So we'll talk about that and get money from them. And we'll use the money. It's a kind of trick. We'll pretend that we're doing well bodily and social welfare work, but our real aim is to chant Hare Krishna and spread the teachings of Krishna consciousness. But if we try to spread the teachings of Krishna consciousness, then people won't give us money, so we have to speak something else. So we're collecting money so that we can preach, but we can't preach what we actually have to say because we're collecting money. And in this way, things get disordered. I'm going to quote now. Yeah, I'll get into that. There's enough time just now. From a well-known letter, well-known among the followers of Srila Prabhupada, who go a little more deeply than a little more deeply into trying to understand what Srila Prabhupada wanted to give us. So there's a quote from a letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote to Karanda, who was practically Srila Prabhupada's most trusted disciple in matters of management until Karanda left Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada wrote to him in a letter in which he discussed several points. And then he comes on to this point, which is in this letter has become the most famous. It becomes what he's taught, what Srila Prabhupada is writing about. He's replying to a letter from Karanda. Srila Prabhupada writes, regarding your points about taxation, corporate status, etc., I have heard from Jayatirtha that you want to make a big plan for centralization of management, taxes, monies, corporate status, book, keeping credit like that. And that makes sense, doesn't it? When you've got a widespread movement all over the place, if you can centralize all the bookkeeping, that takes a lot of the pressure off the individual local leaders so they can concentrate on chanting Hare Krishna. And by centralizing it, then you make sure everything's in order, because after all, we have to deal with the civil and governmental authorities on these matters. Often the local leaders aren't so together materially, and they may be negligent in their duties of submitting accounts and so on. So it sounds like a damn good idea to centralize everything. Srila Prabhupada continues, I do not at all approve of such a plan. Srila Prabhupada himself was very organized. He founded the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and the first few people who were with him when he founded it, and he got them all to sign and become trustees, among themselves, they thought it was a bit of a joke, because here we are, just a ragtag group of bumbling, trying to be something like devotees. They didn't really know what it meant to be a devotee. I don't think anyone even shaved their head at that time. Maybe Kirtananda had. We're talking about the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We don't even have any property of our own. We just have a rented place in the most rundown district of New York City. So they thought it was a bit of a joke. But Prabhupada wanted an organization called the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Srila Prabhupada wanted organization, but he says, do not centralize anything. So he wanted an organization. Srila Prabhupada is trying to make an organization, but at the same time, he was very much aware of the downside of organizations. So he was organizing, but trying to make it not too organized. Srila Prabhupada wrote, each temple must remain independent and self-sufficient. That was my plan from the very beginning. Why are you thinking otherwise? Once before you wanted to do some centralizing with your GBC meeting, and if I did not interfere, the whole thing would have been killed. The whole thing would have been killed. Srila Prabhupada is talking about over-institutionalization. Do not think in this way of big corporation, big credit, centralization. These are all nonsense proposals. Now, from the organizational standpoint, these are all excellent proposals. But Srila Prabhupada says they're all nonsense proposals. Management, everything should be done locally by local men. Accounts must be kept, things must be kept in order and lawfully done. But that should be each temple's concern, not yours. Now, this is a very well-known quote coming up. The Krishna consciousness movement is for training men to be independently thoughtful and competent in all types of departments of knowledge and action, not for making bureaucracy. Once there is bureaucracy, the whole thing will be spoiled. There must always be individual striving and work and responsibility, competitive spirit. Talking about an organization, competitive spirit within an organization can kill it, but it can also, at a certain level, it can really keep it dynamic. Not that, Srila Prabhupada continues, not that one shall dominate and distribute benefits to the others, and they do nothing but beg from you and you provide. No, never mind, there may be botheration to register each center, take individually a tax certificate, become separate corporations in each state. That will train men how to do these things, and they shall develop reliability and responsibility. That is the point. I am a little observing now, especially in your country, referring to the United States of America, that our men are losing their enthusiasm for spreading on our programs of the Krishna Conscious Movement. Otherwise, why are so many letters of problems coming? Dissatisfied. That is not a very good sign. And then Srila Prabhupada immediately detects the problem. The whole problem is they are not following the regulated principles that I can detect. Without this, enthusiasm will be lacking. Even mechanically following. Now we're talking about organized religion, mechanically following some religious process, but that's not really spiritual. But Srila Prabhupada didn't agree with that. Srila Prabhupada wrote, even mechanically following, if he gets gradually understanding from the class, he will come to the point of spontaneous enthusiasm. This spontaneous, loving devotional service is not such an easy matter. But if one simply sticks strictly to the rules and regulations, I've been studying many of Srila Prabhupada's quotations in this regard, and he repeatedly speaks about following the rules and regulations, and repeatedly he uses the word in this regard, strictly. Strictly to the rules and regulations, like rising early, chanting 16 rounds, chanting Gayatri, keeping always clean, then his enthusiasm will grow more and more. And if there is also patience and determination, one day he will come to the platform of spontaneous devotion, then his life will be perfect. What is Srila Prabhupada doing here? He's quoting Rupa Goswami, Upadeshamrita, Utsaha Nishadharyat, Tattat Kama Pravartanat, Sangatyaga Sato Vrite, Sharbhya Bhakti Prasiddhyati. And then Srila Prabhupada says, all this I've told you in the nectar of devotion. So I do not think the leaders are themselves following, nor are they seeing that others are following strictly. This must be rectified at once. Each center remain independent, that's all right, but the president and other officers must themselves follow and see the others are following the regulative principles carefully. So Srila Prabhupada did want organized religion, but organized to follow the rules and regulations that he gave, very much stressing on the organized religion most importantly, these rules are required. The rules, the basic rules and regulations of spiritual life. And it's not that Prabhupada didn't want the tax returns filled in and all the governmental procedures followed, but he wanted to decentralize this. Then continuing, the president and other officers of each individual temple, Srila Prabhupada's writing about, must themselves follow and see the others are following the regulative principles carefully and giving them good instruction so they may understand nicely why this tapasya is necessary. And the GBC and sannyasis will travel and see the officers are doing this. And if they observe any lowering of the standard, they must reform and advise. So we can see that practically the main purpose of Srila Prabhupada making this religious institution was to ensure that the religious practices are followed. And other things, bureaucracy, Srila Prabhupada understood the importance of governmental procedures and all this, and he didn't say to neglect them, but he stressed so much on the basic spiritual, institutional, if you like, practices of rising early, chanting 16 rounds, and so on. If they observe any lowering of the standard, they must reform and advise. It is very difficult to give up very quickly so many bad habits as you have got in your country, so educate them gradually, first with chanting, and do not be so much anxious. Yes, I was quoting this previously. Do not be so much anxious to count up so many numbers of new devotees if such devotees go away later, being too early forced. Now, here we have a religious institution, which Srila Prabhupada has set up, but he's warning, don't force people to follow. Religious institution means rules. Srila Prabhupada is stressing the rules, but he's saying don't force it too early. In other words, and even when people have taken it up, the leaders, the GBCs and sannyasis, must travel to see that others are following, and not just see that they're following in the manner of an institutional bureaucrat or factotum or institutional official going around with a big stick saying, oh, you have to follow, but teaching them, preaching to them about how these need to be followed to develop our love of Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada said, I want to see a few sincere devotees, not many false devotees or pretenders. And then just after this, in the talk, in the letter Srila Prabhupada wrote, there is some symptom of missing the point. So institutionalism, Srila Prabhupada didn't use that word here. I don't know if he ever used it. He did use the word institution several times in an approving manner. He wrote of the institution of Varnashram Dharma, for instance, also. But he was very aware of the possibility of missing the point. Institutionalism means, and it's true, not only in ISKCON, not only in any religious institution, but in any institution, as Weber, I'll speak a little bit about him in the next talk, is that that's the essence of what Max Weber and other sociologists, they analyze, is that when an institution is set up, but then as it gets more and more organized, missing the point for which it was set up. So I plan to speak more on this in another session. It's not, what I'm talking about is not in and of itself spiritually uplifting, But it is important for the responsible members of this society. Srila Prabhupada wrote that he wanted persons who are independently thoughtful. So it is important to understand these things so that we can try to make the institution which Srila Prabhupada gave us the best it can be. Be the best you can. The call to individual excellence. Let us try to make ISKCON the best that it can be. It's never going to be perfect because it's operating within the material world. Even in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, we find even one of his very close assistant had serious problems with the material energy. But let us consider all these things. It's also spiritual, and we may say, well, it's not spiritual, they're talking about Krishna's pastimes. But again, all this is required to facilitate that. We need to discuss these things, as Srila Prabhupada did. We need to consider all these things. So Krishna willing, I will speak about on this topic, develop this topic more in another talk. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhi evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha dante nitaya chunakam padaya nipatya kritvacha kalakushatameta daham bravimi he sadhava sakala eva vihaya durang gauranga chanda charne kuruta Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.